stopped by. She didn't recall our names and had no idea why we'd come. March 30th. Because I was in a bind with my BBC story, I devoted most of my day to defrosting the freezer. In the afternoon, I called the delivery service to order some pot, and an hour later, a guy named Stogie came to the door. After counting my money, he looked at the papers on my table and said, "Hey, are you David Sedaris? My wife really likes you." He asked if he could have my autograph, and I was so flattered. I mean, here he was, a big-time pot dealer, and he wanted my autograph? It was sweet of him to ask, and his attention made it much easier to finish the BBC story. April 10th, Hanover, New Hampshire. I was met this morning by a woman named Georgia who took me across the river to do a radio interview in Vermont. Afterward, we went to a restaurant where she seemed to know everyone. On leaving after lunch, she introduced me to an 80-year-old Japanese-American woman named B, who said, "We just got back from our annual Good Friday March for Peace." B, I learned, lives part-time in a local Quaker retirement community. The rest of the year, we live on the farm. "You farm?" I ask. "Oh, yes, half for decades. My husband and I are tied to the land." I asked what she farmed and was slightly disappointed when she said, "Christmas trees." Because, come on, that's really not the sort of thing that forces you out of bed at 5 a.m. I could be wrong, but don't Christmas trees pretty much take care of themselves? April 15th, New York. I passed the black Israelites on 7th Avenue and 50th Street this afternoon. These are the people who wear outlandish robes and talk about how much Jesus hated white people. I was walking along, minding my own business, when the guy with the microphone called me a cracker faggot. April 17th. Rakoff was on As the World Turns today, playing a talent scout for the Visage Modeling Agency. His lines included, "Are you kidding? I'd never miss a Rebecca Drake fashion show. I'm simply mad for her work." I've never seen this particular soap opera before, but will watch as long as he's on it. On Monday, he'll appear again and say, "Excuse me, miss, but do you think I might look through your portfolio?" April 20th. On my way home tonight, I passed a fistfight taking place in front of the pizzeria on the corner of Spring and Thompson. I'm not sure who started it, but the kickboxer won, literally hands down. April 27th. I'm reading a book Amy suggested by Maria Fluke. It's about her sister, who took off at the age of 14 with a 50-year-old man she met at a bowling alley. He led her to Norfolk, Virginia, where she started working as a prostitute. At one point, the two of them go off to steal a fur coat. They're in a store, and he tells her to wait by the door while he stands beside the Jewish piano. That's what he calls the cash register. The Jewish Piano. It's such a good book. May 7th, La Bagotière. On my way to Segrifontaine, I passed three teenage girls lying on their backs in the middle of the road. It was a dumb place to relax, as they were surrounded on both sides by winding curves. I walked by, and then two of them stood and asked if I had a cigarette for their friend. I indicated that mine were menthols, and they said that was fine. Teenagers in Normandy always seem so innocent, even when they're hanging out in a village square. They always smile and say hello. Hugh passed the girls an hour later on his bike, and they stopped him to ask if he was English. "American," he told them. When they learned that he lives in New York, they asked if he'd ever seen Leonardo DiCaprio. "Well, yes," he said, "as a matter of fact." I was there, too, and remember it clearly. DiCaprio was with a beautiful young woman stepping out of a cab in front of the Museum of Natural History. He tried to pay with a 50, and when the driver said that the bill was too big, the movie star stood in line at the hot dog cart and got change there. That's what being famous gets you in New York. Change. The girls asked Hugh what other famous people he'd seen, and he said something unsatisfying like, "Oh, you know." I keep a list of the stars I see. But even without it, I'd have made things up just to get a reaction out of them. I would have given them the New York they imagine, the one where you can't leave your house without seeing Madonna and Michael Jackson breastfeeding their babies. If you were going to give these girls one star, though, Leonardo DiCaprio was definitely the one. Hugh got back on his bike, and as he took off, the girls resumed their position on the road. So small town, it must hurt. May 12th, New York. Helen died the other night at 6 o'clock, 5 days after being transferred to a Staten Island nursing home. At the funeral parlor on Bleecker Street, I met her sister Minnie, who had a voice as deep as a man's. "We used to call her Baby Hippo because she was always so fat in the hips and the rear," she said. Hugh told her that we thanked Helen in all our play programs. "She's the one who gave us a sewing machine we used to make curtains."
"That was my machine," Minnie said. "You should have been thanking me, not her."
The sisterly resemblance was striking. May 23rd. My friend Doug is visiting from Los Angeles. He's been single for as long as I've known him and went out recently with a guy who took him to bed and whispered, "Let's pretend we're cousins." It's one thing to act like you're somebody's brother or to role-play a father and son fantasy, but how do you pretend to be cousins? Doug asked. For the rest of the afternoon, we came up with possible dialogue, standouts being, "Isn't it funny how our dads look so much alike?" And, "How come I call my mother Mom and you call her Aunt Sharon?" June 6th, Chicago. A joke told to me by the media escort, Bill Young. "Did you hear about the Polish lottery? You win $1 a year for 1,000,000 years. He then said, "The good thing about French drinking water is you know nobody's taken a bath in it." June 10th, Birmingham, Alabama. I was outside the Atlanta airport having a cigarette when I saw a mentally ill person wander over and search the ashtray for salvageable butts. He hobbled, wearing what looked to be too tight shoes, and his pockets were bulging, I guess from all the ashtrays he'd visited before this one. I was seated on a bench, and as he stood in front of me, I looked at the tag on his knapsack. Name, E-Dog. Street, my street. City, my city. State, my state. June 14th, Nashville, Tennessee. While waiting for my flight, I took a seat beside an elderly man and his 6-year-old granddaughter. Just before our boarding was announced, the girl climbed into his lap and pounded on his colostomy bag. "Is that your wallet?" she asked in a sing-song voice that told me she knew very well what it was. "Oh, May June," the man said wearily. "You know it ain't my wallet."
"It's all filled with pooty," the girl said. "When you get home, will you throw it down the toilet?"
"Probably so," the man said, no doubt counting the seconds until one of them, it didn't matter which, got on that plane and flew far, far away. June 21st, San Francisco. In Los Angeles yesterday, I met a former book publicist. "Why did you quit?" I asked. She sighed. "I was tired of having authors call and say, 'My shower cap's too tight.'" A joke told to me by my media escort, Frank. Princess Diana and Mother Teresa are in heaven, and the latter isn't too happy. "It isn't fair," she says. "All those years I lived in squalor, devoting myself to the sick and suffering. All she did was attend cocktail parties and model clothes. So how come she has a halo and I don't?" Then God says, "That's not a halo. It's a steering wheel." June 29th, New York. This morning I began my French class at the Alliance Française on the Upper East Side. There are 8 students, ranging in age from a woman in her mid-50s to a boy who looks to be around 15. I worried I might be the worst, but that honor goes to an Australian who accepted a phone call during class, braying, "Bonjour! No, it's me. I'm in French class." Our teacher is a beautiful, mournful-looking Parisian with long brown hair. It's an intermediate rather than a beginner's class, so I assumed that everyone, like me, had studied a little before signing up. One of the students is Japanese-American, and when the teacher asked her a question in French, she answered in English, "What? Are you asking me what I do? I guess I'm a student, okay?" June 30th. Don called this afternoon, just as I was getting ready to leave. I said I'd phone him tomorrow, and he suggested I try it around 12:30. "Tell Christina it's you, and if I happen to be gassing to someone, I'll get off the blower." I love how old his slang is. July 1st. Today was my second French class, and I got to play Fabienne in the "Comment trouvez-vous Paris" dialogue we were asked to memorize. She's a brooder, Fabienne, and I worked hard to master her inflection, especially her line, "Me, this town, I don't like it. I prefer my Normandy." The Australian didn't show up today, but the Japanese-American student was there. When the teacher asked her to play the role of Carmen, she shook her head, saying, "I don't think so." The Brazilian guy hadn't done his homework either, just didn't feel like it. The teacher, Cecile, is very shy and blushes easily. It took all she had to say softly, "The next time, you should come prepared." Last night, Hugh helped me with my memorized dialogue, and this afternoon I started on our next assignment, in which Jean-Claude bitches about the subway. July 10th. Rosalie transferred to our class last Wednesday because her previous teacher wasn't challenging enough. She's clearly the best student and is always well-dressed and quick to help the rest of us out. This as opposed to the Australian, who rollerbladed to class, arrived late, and then opened the window because she was cold. She didn't ask, just did it. July 20th. Class was strange today. We spent 10 minutes on the future tense before switching to reflexive verbs. The teacher asked if there were any questions, and someone asked where she had learned her Spanish. She told us her husband is Puerto Rican, so she'd picked it up from him. Then someone asked how long she'd lived in Paris. I then asked where she lived before moving to Paris, and when she said Morocco, everyone started in. "Where did your parents live? What does your father do?" The Brazilian, who never does his homework, turned on us then, saying, "What you are doing is very rude." Sharon explained that we meant no offense, and that Americans are sometimes too open. I added that to us her life was very exotic and we were just curious. I mean, really, it's not like we asked whether she uses a tampon or a pad. August 3rd, La Bagotière. Hugh, Dennis, and I flew TWA from New York to Paris, and the plane was either half empty or half full, depending on how you look at it. I sat beside a stylish woman from the Upper West Side who was maybe 60 and who said after takeoff, "All right, I'm going to tell you one story and then I'm going to shut up." The story was about a tattooed passenger on a crosstown bus who had a boa constrictor beneath her blouse wrapped around her like a bandage. It was good. And as I listened, I thought of the coming year in France and wondered when I'd next understand everything a stranger was saying to me. The New York class helped some. At De Gaulle, we got a cab driven by a cheerful black man who spoke with great passion about two accidents he'd witnessed earlier that morning. It took an hour to reach the Montparnasse station where we caught the train to Normandy. We boarded early, and as I stepped out onto the platform for a cigarette, an old woman asked if I would carry her bag up the stairs. I did, and she tried to give me 5 francs. Of course I turned it down, but seeing as I no longer have a job and have no working papers, I probably should have taken it. We're fine here for the month of August, but then I need to start French school, which will mean finding an apartment in Paris. August 21st, Paris. At the Alliance Française yesterday afternoon, I took a placement exam. 25 multiple-choice questions and a short essay in which I had to describe a party. Without the class I took in New York, I'd have been lost. But between that and all the strange vocabulary words I've memorized over the past few years, I think I did okay. The The party was held at the home of my Uncle Robert, who lives beside the sea with a hairless cat. My family attended and ate a lot. I drank too much, and my face got swollen. After I had finished, I approached a desk where a well-dressed middle-aged woman held a plastic sheet with holes punched in it over my multiple-choice test. "Very good," she said. When it came to my essay, she pulled out a pencil and slashed away at all my misspellings and grammatical mistakes. Then she looked up and asked if I had used a dictionary.
Me?
It made no sense to her that someone on my level would know and be able to spell a medical term used for facial swelling. I explained my 10 new words a day program, and she laid down her pencil, saying, "Good for you. That is an excellent way to learn." Meanwhile, the apartment we're renting won't be ready until the middle of September, so it looks like I'll be going back and forth from Normandy. August 31st. The train from Normandy was crowded with people returning from their vacations, and when we arrived in Paris, the station was a madhouse. There must have been 80 people in the taxi line, all of them dragging big, heavy suitcases. Cabs were scarce, and it took an hour to get one, mainly because people kept cutting to the front of the line. First, it was an obese woman with an equally out-of-shape child. Then came a family of four, the grandmother being led by the hand. Someone made a comment, and she shouted, "I'm blind!" Apparently, it's a rule that the disabled get to go first in the taxi line. This seems fair, seeing as the buses and subways are inaccessible, but then it got out of hand, and a dozen more people headed to the front. Either the train from Lourdes had just pulled up, or owning a cell phone and a little too much gold jewelry are now considered handicaps by the French government. September 1st. I really lucked out in terms of a French teacher. The woman won't give her age, but I'm guessing she's in her late 40s, funny, inexpressive. I'm the oldest student and the only American. The others are Japanese, Thai, Polish, Argentinian, Italian, Egyptian, and Chinese. Today's class started with sentence structure. Then we went through the alphabet and stopped whenever we came to the first letter of someone's name. I went third and was instructed to introduce myself and give my nationality, occupation, marital status, a short list of likes and dislikes, and my reason for living in Paris. A surprising number of students disliked the sun and adored smoking. A Japanese girl said that she hated mosquitoes, and the teacher made fun of her, saying, "Really? I thought everyone loved them." Unlike my New York teacher, who would occasionally at least try to explain something in English, this is all French all the time. By the end of class, my brain felt like it had been kicked. September 3rd. Last night, I worked on my homework for 3 hours. This morning, I got up early and spent another 4.5 hours on it. I wondered if I was maybe going overboard, but all that time did nothing to prepare me for today's lesson or for the teacher. My fellow students have begun forming camps. The Poles sit together, as do the Japanese, Koreans, Thais, and an inseparable couple composed of an Italian girl and an Argentinian musician who announced during his introduction that he likes to make love. I was surprised by the number of people who hadn't done their homework or who handed in scraps of paper written on the metro. The teacher exploded, calling us liars and good-for-nothing shits. She stormed across the room, berating those who had already had absences. Apparently, people enroll just to get their student visas. Then they either come to class or stay home, try their best, or give up and stare out the window. If I'm not mistaken, this was her attempt to frighten them off. No one could do anything right today, not even the sweet, pretty Yugoslavian girl who has no one to bond with. I cringed when the teacher yelled at her. At one point, she asked us a number of true or false questions regarding the passé composé. Everyone agreed to the final one, and when I questioned it, she marched across the room, raised my hand, and said, "Bravo! He's the only one in the room who's not sleeping. He's the only one who caught it." I felt the hatred of my classmates and slunk down in my seat. Then, too, I'm the only one who typed his homework and handed it in, fastened with a paperclip. She told us to keep our sentences simple, and I didn't quite obey. But why write, "I went to the store with a friend," when without relying on the dictionary I can say, "I visited the slaughterhouse with my godfather and a small monkey." September 7th. We got a new student today, a Moroccan who's clearly the best French speaker in the room. She correctly and confidently answered one question after another until the teacher shut her down, saying, "This is not your little occasion to show off. This is for people who don't know the language." Later, when I handed in my homework, the teacher took the stack of papers and said to me, in front of everyone, "What is this, a detective novel?" Meanwhile, I got back yesterday's assignment with "excellent" written on the last page. It meant the world, as I'd put a lot of time into it. September 10th. I can't figure this woman out for the life of me. Today she came to class apologizing for not having graded our homework. In hopes that we might forgive her, she brought in a chocolate cake and a roll of paper towels. "Come, don't be shy. Eat." She was kind and funny for close to 20 minutes, and then she started losing her patience. Today's lesson involved the future tense. We were given an in-class assignment, and as we wrote, our teacher moved from desk to desk and screamed at us. When she got to me, she looked at my paper, bent down, and attacked it with her eraser, digging away at my mistakes and saying, in her best English, "I hate you." Later, I mispronounced a word, and she said it again. Mine was the last answer of the day, so I was left being the dunce. It's a horrible feeling. I'm the one who allows everyone else to leave the room thinking, "Well, at least I'm not him." September 11th. In class, the teacher picked on the former flight attendant from Hong Kong, then Anya Sayre, and the pretty young Yugoslavian woman. Toward the middle of the class, she asked us to turn in our homework assignments, and when I pulled my type sheet from its folder, she snatched it away and held it above her head, shouting, "When I tell you to do a book assignment, you're supposed to do it in your notebook. How many times do I have to tell you that?" I pointed out that I had also done it in my notebook. It was all there, written in pencil. I'd only typed it up, thinking we might be expected to hand it in. This was where she should have apologized. Instead, she just said, "Oh." Later, we broke into groups to practice a future tense. I was with Anna from Poland, who works as a nanny for a family with three rotten kids, and the former flight attendant, who started class last month and has no idea what the teacher is saying. September 13th, La Bagotière. I spent all weekend working on my homework. The teacher wants an essay about the future, something along the lines of, "One day I will be rich and successful." But that's for kids. Instead, I wrote, "One day I will be very old and reside in a nursing home. Toothless, bald, and wrinkled, I will wake myself three times a night, and with the help of my nurses, I will go to the toilet. I will eat nothing but gruel, and once a month I will bathe myself in tepid, cloudy water. I will regard my long, yellow toenails. I will have no visitors because all of my friends will be in their coffins. When I am old, I will lie on my bed and stare at the ceiling. From the next room, I will hear my ancient French teacher throwing chalk against the wall. I will say, 'Stop, that's enough,' and she will criticize my pronunciation." September 14th, Paris. The teacher threw a lot of chalk today, but none of it at me. We have a new student, a German au pair, and I wonder what she must think, watching people get yelled at and hit with things. Our last homework assignment was handed back, and though I technically made no mistakes, she still found fault with it. I'd written, for example, "You will complain all the time, day and night." Her comment read, an angry red pen, "Pick one or the other. You don't need both." September 15th. The teacher was a kitten today. She picked on no one, and for a brief while we all loosened up. Our homework for Thursday is to finish reading a comic strip and identify the vulgar language. September 17th. We had two new students today, an Indonesian who loves to travel and a 50-year-old American named Janet who, when asked her profession, said, "Je suis a hairdresser." She answered most of today's questions in English, and while the teacher let her get away with it, tomorrow, I imagine, she'll be hit with both barrels. Today we moved into a tent you use when ordering someone around. September 18th. We had a substitute today, a casually dressed woman who did not give her name. She asked what we'd been assigned for our homework, and just as we were telling her, the teacher walked in and apologized for being late. She said something to the substitute like, "You can go now," but the woman had no intention of leaving, so the two of them went at it. "You were late," the substitute said. "The rule is that after 15 minutes, someone else takes the class." Our teacher said she had the lesson all planned, and the substitute interrupted her and said, "Time is time." They went back and forth until eventually our teacher surrendered and stormed out of the room, telling us to have a nice weekend. It was fun watching her fight with someone who could defend herself. Our lesson had to do with the imperative, the tense you use when making demands. To illustrate it, the substitute made me her slave and insisted that I kiss everyone in the room except her. Later we were told to come up with a list of commands for students learning French. You must do your homework, you must not daydream, etc. I raised my hand. "You must dodge the morsels of chalk thrown by the teacher." The substitute seemed confused. "But no, the teacher does not throw chalk." "Ours does," said the Korean guy next to me. "When?" the substitute asked. "All the time," I said. The Thai woman in the front row turned around then and hissed at me. After class, I was approached by her and Polish Anna, both of them furious and convinced that now our teacher is going to get fired. I tried to say that if I got the teacher fired, I could just as easily have the substitute fired for making me kiss everyone, but it came out a mess. Anna said she's had her share of nice teachers, but she never learns with them. "The strict ones are the best," she said, and the Thai woman agreed. I felt like a total shit then, and even worse after talking to the Italian, who said that I was clearly the teacher's favorite. I asked what gave her that idea, and she said, "Because she told you that she hated you." September 21st. The teacher returned, and the Poles and Koreans breathed an audible sigh of relief. I was happy as well until she gave us three homework assignments, these on top of the two she had given us earlier. I've spent hours on them already and still have to write an essay on an American holiday. It's a lot of work, as I'll have to double-check all my spelling in the dictionary. September 25th. The teacher was a real wildcat today. We got a new student on Tuesday, an Israeli. He talks a lot in class, and she laid into him for it. "This is not your own private session. Why don't you think before you open your mouth?" Still, he continued on, not the least bit intimidated. The teacher threw a lot of chalk and said to me at one point, "Teaching you is like having a cesarean section every day of the week." Later, related to the exercise we were doing, she asked each of us, "Are you afraid of me?" The Israeli said, "I have no fear of you at all." I said pretty much the opposite, and she used a word I didn't catch. It wasn't coward, I know how to say that. She used a word I wasn't familiar with, and added, "Every day you sit there and tremble." September 27th. I bought nothing at the flea market today, but stopped to admire a human skull from the 6th century. It's on a stand. The head of a child, crazed with tiny lines and exquisite. The woman selling it gave me the price, which amounted to $6,000. It seemed extravagant, but then, how do you value a skull? The way it is, I could buy either a decent used car or some kid's head. It's twice the cost of Hugh's computer and half the price of a hysterectomy. September 28th. Polish Anna and I spoke after class today. She works as an au pair and told me that her mistress is currently in the hospital. The woman is 6 months pregnant and just learned that the fetus's legs are only 2 inches long. That means, Anna said, that he will have to be pushed always in a rolling chair, and this is very difficult here in Paris. Based on this news, the woman has decided to terminate her pregnancy. This is interesting, as I don't think you could abort that late in the United States. I'm sure there are always extenuating circumstances, but I don't think that this, tiny legs, would be an acceptable reason, would it? September 29th. This was the last class before our week-long break, and the teacher baked a cake and organized a little party. Anna brought bread and cheese, the German made a potato salad, and the Japanese girl brought in seaweed crackers. A lot of people didn't show up, and because there were so few of us, we got to sit around and ask the teacher personal questions. It was fun watching her talk with her mouth full. After she finished, she pulled out her cigarettes and offered them to everyone. I lit one of my own, and she told me, using a word I'd learned from Manuela, that menthol cigarettes are tacky. She talked about American hypocrisy and Puritanism and asked why my people were so caught up in our president's sex life. The others got involved and said, essentially, "Yeah, you. What's your problem?" October 2nd. This morning while cutting cheese, Hugh sliced off the tip of his finger. That sounds like a sentence I'd write for class, but it's true. He worried he was going to pass out. My big fear was trying to phone someone for help. There's a small Arab-owned market a few doors from our apartment building, so while he wrapped his hand in a rag, I ran down the street to buy Band-Aids, remembering along the way that I have no idea what the word is. I tried to buy some at a pharmacy last year in Normandy, but my French was so bad I couldn't even describe them. In the end, I drew a picture, and the woman looked at it, responding with what I guessed was, "This is a drugstore. We have no surfboards here." It really was a bad picture. My next attempt was even worse and resembled a flying carpet. In the end, I gave up, figuring my blisters would heal on their own. This morning at the market, I was able to say, in French, "My friend cut his finger, so I am looking for a morsel of rubber." The sentence kind of falls apart at the end, but still it did the trick. The man handed me a small $4 box of Band-Aids, and I left realizing that everything in that store costs $4. A can of tomatoes, a bag of rice, a jug of laundry detergent. It's all the same price. I returned home, grateful that Hugh was still conscious, and when I repeated what I'd said at the market, he corrected me. It seems he did not cut his finger, but rather cut of himself the finger. He applied the Band-Aid, cleaned the bloody knife, and went back to making lunch while I watched from the doorway, hoping he might stab himself again so I could return to the store with both the reflexive verb to cut of oneself and the proper word for Band-Aid. October 8th. I have 2 homework assignments to hand in, and though I could make it easy, I just can't stop myself from having fun with it. One of the assignments involves accepting or rejecting social invitations. When asked if she wants to join Henri for a run around the lake, Natalie could reply, "With pleasure." Instead, I'm having her say, "That would be different. I'll just put on my leg and we'll be ready to go." I'm liking the teacher a lot more since the new semester started. The class is smaller, and the students are a bit older. It's a good group. I like the Italian lawyer, who isn't afraid to admit when he's lost. The Colombian gets a lot of grief, but it's his fault for not doing his homework. October 9th. After class, I took Amy to a pet shop on the right bank, where we saw a miniature pot-bellied pig for $300. He was the size of a house cat and stood in his cage, urinating a puddle. Amy can't believe I didn't walk out with him. She was mad, practically, and kept saying, "It's not expensive," as if that's the only thing that would stop a person from buying a pig and keeping it in his third-floor apartment. I tried imagining him as a pet, but all I saw were his sharp hooves scratching my beautiful floors. October 10th. Just as Amy told me and Hugh that she's never heard anyone in Paris say, "Excuse me," she got hit in the knee with a Coke can, and the boy who threw it called out, in French, that he was sorry. October 12th. Today, the high school students went on strike. There were tens of thousands of them marching down the boulevard in front of the school, and we could hear their chants all afternoon. The kids were marching in support of their teachers, who'd had a strike of their own a few weeks back. I'm not certain what it was all about, but someone told me that the government had wanted to cut some jobs. Walking home from class, I was surrounded by teens with messages painted on their faces. They stopped to chide customers walking into stores and scolded the merchants for not closing in support of their cause. October 13th. Today, the teacher called me a sadist. I tried to say that that was like the pot calling the kettle black, but came out with something closer to, that is like a pan saying to a dark pan, "You are a pan." October 16th. I noticed that the teacher was wearing new glasses today. This led to an explanation of the difference between nouveau and neuf. The former is apparently new to you, while the latter is factory fresh. I did some homework on the train, but still have to type up a paper on the differences between New York and Paris. We're learning to compare things, to say that someone is less tall than her neighbor, more intelligent than her brother, as ugly as her father. I no longer dread school the way I did a month ago, but I'm really going to have to work if I want to keep up while I'm in America for my tour. October 22nd. Yesterday there were more student demonstrations. Because the high schoolers want more teachers, they sometimes need to overturn cars and destroy phone booths. After class, I sat in the Luxembourg Gardens for a while, reading Mama Black Widow, a novel by Iceberg Slim. I'm all for any book that uses the words pulchritudinous and hungry poo hole on the same page. October 23rd. One nice thing about school is that it's made Friday meaningful again. I now feel that, having gotten through 5 days of homework, I have something to celebrate. Last night's assignment was to write something about a movie. I chose Robert Altman's Nashville and spent 6 hours on my one-page paper. It's the articles that kill me, that and words like drifter, which translates to one who travels without a goal. Meanwhile, today, we took a test that involved multiple choice and an audio exam. It was hard and made all the harder by the teacher, who wandered around the room with a lit cigarette that smelled so good I found it nearly impossible to concentrate. The audio test was discouraging, and that a French 12-year-old could have passed it with no problem. Then, too, I hadn't taken one since Kent State 20 years ago. After we finished, the teacher invited us all to the cafeteria for coffees, everyone smoked, and it was nice to sit together outside of class. November 23rd, San Luis Obispo, California. At 5:30 this morning, the super shuttle came to take me from Ronnie's apartment to the San Francisco airport. There were 3 other passengers on board, but the only ones awake were me and the driver, who was listening to talk radio. The theme was alien abduction, and the guest, a man named Dr. Reed, claimed to have been taken at a campground. He was not at liberty to discuss its location. This, he said, on the advice of his lawyer, who told him it might hurt his case. "I don't get it," I said. "Is he suing the aliens or the campground?" "Most likely the campground," the driver said. "Chances are, this isn't the first time a thing like this has happened. They should have posted signs." This is not what you want to hear from a man responsible for 4 lives. "Reason this show comes on at 5 a.m. is that they don't want regular people listening to it," he said. "They don't want us to know." Alcohol and telephones do not mix. On Saturday night, I called Paris from the Heathman Hotel in Portland. I'd figured it might cost $30, but I hadn't spoken to Hugh in weeks. It was late, and I was drunk and feeling lonely. I had only vague memories of the call the following morning when I was presented with a bill for $156. I'm still trying to remember what we talked about, but can't recollect much aside from the news that Dennis, the cat, is eating a lot. November 27th, Phoenix. Ted's boyfriend, James, loaned me a cookbook called Imperial Dishes of China, and I found myself reading it as though it were a collection of beautifully titled short stories. 100 birds paying homage to the phoenix stood out, but nothing compared to Monkey Heads on a Pine Tree. In France, I often leaf through recipes in search of words I think might come in handy. It's how I learned the verbs to simmer and to chop. Imperial Dishes was in English, but still I feel I came away with something. Here were instructions such as rinse the lips twice in cold water and remove the penis and carve it into bite-sized pieces. Mental pictures aside, it was disturbing to read such things in the form of a direct order. Scald the vagina and remove any remaining hairs, for example. As literature, Imperial Dishes was outstanding, but as an actual working cookbook, I think it left a few too many holes. A homosexual's notion of bite-sized penis is no doubt dramatically different than that of, say, an Orthodox rabbi's. It's just not specific enough. When told to, quote, arrange the camel paw attractively, my first question was, how? Camel paws don't even look attractive on camels. Where do you buy these ingredients in the first place? If you can't find a camel paw, can you use a donkey paw instead? Do donkeys even have paws? And what's an acceptable substitute for a vagina? It's frustrating, but that's what I liked about Imperial Dishes of China. It made me think. December 4th, Paris. I returned to French class after 5 weeks away, and the teacher kissed me. December 10th. As a homework assignment, I need to write a letter from a man to his wife. The two are on the brink of divorce, the teacher's idea, and a good one, I think. Today in class, we read an essay about social change in France. The teacher is outraged over a new program that will allow friends and roommates to enjoy the same tax rates as married couples. Single people pay a lot here, as the government wants to promote marriage and childbirth. The new program was designed to give gay couples the same rights as married people, but instead, the government, afraid it might appear to be condoning homosexuality, has opened it up to any two people living under the same roof. Roommates, a mother and her middle-aged daughter. It's cowardice, the teacher says. December 12th. The unemployed have gone on strike. At least that's how I understood it from listening to the radio. The teacher explained that, seeing as they have no jobs, they can't actually walk off them. Instead, they're holding a protest and insisting on a Christmas bonus with their unemployment check. She's in their corner and said it's unfair to punish children just because their parents were thrown out of work. The information desk at the Louvre is also on strike, demanding better working conditions. By this, do they mean a public so well informed they won't have to pester the employees with questions? December 13th. I took a walk last night and ran into Richard, who lives in a grand left bank apartment overlooking the river. We talked for half an hour or so, and he told me about a friend of his, a journalist who each week buys $60 worth of magazines from a kiosk near the Café de Flore. She was there with a male friend recently, a photographer, who wanted to see if one of his pictures had been used in the latest Italian Vogue. The guy started leafing through it when the news agent said, the way they do here, this is not a lending library. The journalist said she would pay for the magazine, and when she pulled out her wallet, the news agent said, why don't you go get fucked up the ass by a nigger? So much stuff goes over my head here. December 14th. For homework, we're supposed to write about gift-giving practices in our home countries. I don't actually understand the assignment. We read an essay in class. The teacher asked how flowers are wrapped in Japan. And then she told a story about her husband's Greek grandmother spitting into the mouth of a newborn baby. December 15th. Yesterday, the teacher held up my essay on social change during the 1960s and pronounced it a remarkable document. I made plenty of grammatical errors, but gained points on the structure. Today I turned in my paper on social customs. In it I wrote that on the eve of an American man's wedding, it is customary for his parents to cut off two of his fingers and bury them near the parking lot. The groom has 8 hours in which to find them, and if he does, it means that the marriage will last. December 22nd. This was the last day of class until the new semester begins in January. We presented the teacher with a lighter I had engraved and the carton of cigarettes I had collected money for. She seemed to appreciate both. The lesson was hard, and we broke off 15 minutes early to eat cake. The room had a nice, festive atmosphere until the Hong Kong student confronted the teacher, saying in English, "How come you no pass me? How come me alone and not nobody else?" Personally, I like this student, if only because she's so bad. She'll occasionally come to class or do her homework, but only if she's in the mood. Her French doesn't sound much different from her Cantonese, and as long as she was around, I was never the worst one. December 24th. As our cab left for the train station this morning, my father turned to me and said, "Ask the driver if it's going to rain all day." I don't think he cared what the answer was. He just wanted to see if I could ask properly, not that he's any judge. He doesn't speak a word of French, but that hasn't stopped him from criticizing me. He said that, "Yes, it's going to rain all day," I said. My father nodded. "It's coming in from the west. Rain always comes from the west in France." This is going to be a long 8 days. December 31st. Last night, shortly after dinner, my father's head caught on fire. He was leaning toward a candle, examining a scratch on the table, and seconds later I noticed the flames which encircled his scalp like a brilliant crown. He looked like a happy king, content that all was well throughout the land. Just as he realized what was happening, Gretchen bounded over with a cloth napkin. Dad retreated into the bathroom and spent 10 minutes examining the damage with a hand mirror. This morning, we went to buy him a hat. January 1st, Paris. Dad ate dinner last night with his airplane ticket in his shirt pocket. With it was a slip of paper upon which he had written the estimated taxi fare to Charles de Gaulle, including the amount he planned to tip the driver. He wore a tan shirt with epaulets, a scarf, a sweater, and a windbreaker. He wore a hat. The poor thing was more than ready to leave, and would have gladly spent the night at the airport, not in a hotel, but just sitting in a chair, waiting. It's not France he dislikes, exactly. I think he just hates to be away from his TV. January 4th. School started today, and we got 2 new students. One's a pregnant Chinese woman who was married to a Frenchman and hopes to name her baby Beyond, and the other is a German fellow who moved here for love. The rest of us introduced ourselves, and then we all recounted our Christmas holidays. I said that half my family came and stayed for 16 days, and my classmates audibly drew in their breath. Then I said that I received 9 cartons of cigarettes, and that before my father left for home, his head caught on fire. Next came Milton, who got drunk on New Year's Eve and fell on his face, breaking a few blood vessels. When Polish Anna's turn came, the teacher accused her of getting drunk as well, even though she denied it. The teacher has this thing about Poles and alcohol. January 7th. In French class, we're studying the gerund d'if, which is used when someone is doing 2 things at once. As part of last night's homework, we were instructed to write 6 sentences along the lines of, "She sang while vacuuming." It was a simple and unrewarding exercise until I turned to the Pocket Guide to Medical French that Amy gave me for Christmas. The book is full of terrific phrases, everything from "Do you feel paranoid?" to "Have you noticed any unusual discharge?" I spent a lot of time constructing sentences for the assignment, my favorite being, "Has anything else been inserted into your anus?" The doctor posed the question as he examined the wounded sphincter. The teacher collected the papers at the end of class and, as usual, took a moment to skim through what I'd handed her. Things like this can go either way. The paper is grammatically correct, but something tells me I may have missed the mark here. January 14th. The teacher was extremely unhappy with the other day's homework and entered the room as if it were a boxing ring. When she's angry, nothing can please her. She didn't warm up until the last half hour of class. We'd listened earlier to a series of recorded phrases and were instructed to match each one with a picture. A kid's voice shouted, "We won," for example, and we matched it with a drawing of a boy raising his arms in victory. This somehow led her to tell us that in Greece, you indicate the number 5 by holding your palm toward your face. Palm outward means the equivalent of "fuck you." In both Greece and Turkey, nodding yes means no, as does closing your eyes. She and a friend went to Istanbul once and couldn't find a room to save their lives. Finally, at midnight, they entered a hotel and asked if there was a vacancy. The desk clerk nodded, and, delighted, they brought in their bags. In the end, she said, the man let them sleep on the roof. She brightens up, eventually, the teacher, but you have to clear the path. Today, every time I thought she was coming out of it, Rafe would ask a question pertaining to something we had supposedly learned months ago. Then she'd furiously write on the board, turning to say, "Now do you understand it?" Rafe would squint and think for a moment before saying, "No," and off she'd go again. Twice she told Louise to shut up, and I got scolded when we were asked to identify the class of people represented in a comic strip she gave us. I said I thought they were working class. When asked why, I pointed out the Jesus snow globe displayed atop their television set. "That shows what you know," the teacher said. "The French proletariat would never decorate their homes with religious iconography, or at least I'm guessing that's what she said." "Okay," I said, "they're low class." That's when she really tore into me, saying she never again wanted to hear language like that from us. She just the other day taught us 3 different words for farting, along with the phrase, "go fuck yourself on a pole," but "low class" is out of bounds. My fellow students began to guess. Were they middle class? Retired class? "No," the teacher shouted. "For God's sake, they're working class." I had given that answer 20 minutes earlier, but I guess she dismissed it when I mentioned the snow globe. It was just that kind of a day. January 18th. Again, the teacher was in a foul mood. She called me a misogynist because, in an essay on my dream house, I said that every evening, once the sun set, I'd decide whether I wanted to sleep with one of my 300 wives or a camel. She later told me, in English, that she hated me. I had used falloir in the subjunctive rather than the imparfait, so I guess I deserved it. January 20th. Today the teacher told us that a ripe camembert should have the same consistency as a human eyebrow. It was just a little something she threw in. All week, as part of our homework, we're supposed to listen to the radio and talk in class about what we heard. Louise brought up the 40-some bodies that were just discovered in Kosovo, and the teacher listened, then said, "Now tell me what happened that was even worse." January 22nd. Doing laundry in Paris has to be planned a week in advance, as it takes that long to work up the change. It shouldn't be that difficult, but cashiers here act as if their money drawers can only accept deposits. In New York, you'd see signs reading, "No change without purchase." But here, they should read simply, "No change." Every time you pay for something, they shake you down for the exact amount. If the thing costs, say, 185 francs, and you hand over a 200-franc bill, the person will frown at it and say, "Really? You don't have 185? At the grocery store, I've had several cashiers say, "Didn't I see something smaller in your wallet?" The other day, one of them snatched my coin purse out of my hands and simply took what she wanted. On top of that, the checkout people sit rather than stand. They don't bag your groceries like they do in the States, and everything is scanned rather than entered manually into the machine. Their only job is to make change, and they refuse to do it. January 24th. It's 9:30 p.m., and I haven't left the apartment all day. 11.5 hours ago, I started my homework, and there's still no end in sight. Every word is checked in the dictionary, every verb tense is reconsidered, and it takes forever. I still have 8 questions to answer, 3 personal sentences to write, and a story to finish. January 25th. I spent a total of 17 hours on my homework. The hardest part was the story the teacher started and asked us to finish. Her opening went like this. At midnight, I decided to leave the party and walk 20 minutes to the train station where I could get a taxi. It was dark and the streets were deserted. I was nervous and hurrying along when I heard a car roll up from behind with its headlights off. My completion reads, surprisingly, the trunk was not uncomfortable. There was a pillow there and a woolen blanket. The floor was carpeted and smelled like pizza. Yes, it was dark, but relatively spacious. While lying there, I would often reflect upon my life before I came to live in this trunk. I'd been walking to the train station when this car stopped behind me. It was dark, but still I could see that the driver was handsome and well-dressed. He sensed my nervousness and said, "Come on then, give us a smile." In my story, she lives in the trunk for 22 days and falls madly in love with the man who put her there. Eventually, they come to tutoie each other through a little hole, and everything's great until he abandons the car at the airport with her still in the back. A steep ticket is issued for illegal parking, and when she is held responsible, she cries. January 26th. Before I left the apartment this afternoon, a woman knocked on the door and asked if I wanted to buy her carpet. I don't know if she lives in the building or just walked in off the street, but either way, the answer was the same. I'm not a big carpet person, but rather than getting into it, I just said no and then hurried to class where the teacher read my story about her being locked in the trunk. Her delivery was good, but she kept pausing to call me a misogynist. "No," I corrected her, "I'm not a misogynist. I'm a misanthrope. I hate everyone equally." January 28th. I went this afternoon and bought a ticket for You've Got Mail, which here is called Vous avez un message. I guess I mispronounced something, as the guy behind the counter loudly mocked me to his associates, all of whom laughed. Handing me my change, he said, "We charge extra to tourists." If he'd said they charge extra to Americans, I might have pointed out that American movies are what keeps his theater in business. As it was, I said nothing and quietly burned for the rest of the day. February 11th. A very small man came to the door this morning and used a verb I wasn't familiar with. His face was smeared with something black, as were his hands. Coal, I wondered. Luckily, Hugh was home and explained that the verb meant to ream out. The man said that by law, our furnace vents and chimneys were to be reamed out once a year. And with that, he scrambled up onto the kitchen counter, then climbed on top of the refrigerator. Once there, he reached into a vent and came away with a fistful of soot, saying we should have it cleaned for insurance purposes. The man's top teeth were rotted to stubs, but the bottom ones were white and even. He came up to my shoulder, that's how small he was. Once we agreed that he should do it, the little guy left and was replaced by his assistant, who was young and handsome. He wore a one-piece suit over his clothes, the kind that mechanics wear, and the rear end was torn open. Like his boss, his hands were black and his face was smeared. I was enchanted and asked if he could do the fireplaces as well. While he worked, I did my homework, pausing every now and then to ask or answer a question. "Did I know," he asked, "that the same verb, to ream out, was also used for sex acts?" "You're kidding," I said. "How interesting." We talked about his love of football and cats and his hatred of the English. It cost the equivalent of $130, but now I can build fires. February 26th. Today was the last day of class. Next month, the teacher goes to Brazil, but then she has to work a few months in the office. She kissed several students goodbye, but I slipped out the door. I would have liked to thank her, but everything feels different since my article, Me Talk Pretty One Day, came out in Esquire. I wish I hadn't published it.